Hello and welcome to Oxtalk for Tuesday the 6th of August 2024. My name is Guy and I've compiled the edition for this week. News items have been selected from local Oxford papers by Margaret Simpson and Di Shaw and recorded at home by Hazel Hobbs and Patricia Lee. The USBs have been copied and distributed by Michelle Lawful. Sunrise today is at 5:36 a.m. and sunset is at 8:44 p.m. Before the news, we mark some events which happened on August the 6th in history. In 1497, Italian explorer John Cabot returned to Bristol from Newfoundland in North America. His voyage, under the commission of Henry VII of England, is the earliest known European exploration of coastal North America since the Norse visits to Vinland in the 11th century. In 1806, after almost 1,000 years, the Holy Roman Empire came to its official end when Emperor Francis II of Austria abdicated the imperial crown. In 1856, the great bell for the Great Clock of Westminster was cast, better known as Big Ben. In 1965, US President Lyndon B. Johnson signed the Voting Rights Act, which sought to overcome legal barriers that prevented African Americans from exercising their right to vote. In 2012, NASA's robotic vehicle Curiosity, also called the Mars Science Laboratory, landed on Mars and soon began transmitting images of the planet's surface. Births on this day: in 1504, Matthew Nosey Parker, Archbishop of Canterbury during the reign of Elizabeth I, was born in Norwich. Parker was obsessed with finding the roots of the Christian Church in England and collected many manuscripts, including the Anglo-Saxon Chronicle. His inquiries upset many people, and his detailed instructions to his clergy on day-to-day matters earned him the reputation of being a bit of a busybody and the name Nosey Parker, although some say this was partly because he had a big nose. In 1809, English poet Alfred Lord Tennyson, often regarded as the chief representative of the Victorian age in poetry, was born in Somersby, Lincolnshire. In 1881, Alexander Fleming, Scottish bacteriologist, best known for discovering the world's first broadly effective antibiotic substance, which he named penicillin, was born in Lochfield, Scotland. In 1937, Barbara Ann Deeks, better known as Dame Barbara Windsor, was born in Shoreditch, London. She was probably best known as a star of the Carry On films and as Peggy Mitchell in the BBC soap opera EastEnders. And deaths on this day: in 1623, Anne Hathaway, wife of English playwright William Shakespeare, died at the age of 66 or 67. In 2001, Larry Adler, American pop and classical harmonica player and composer, died in St. Thomas's Hospital, London, aged 87. In 2012, Sir Bernard Lovell, English physicist, radio astronomer and first director of Jodrell Bank Observatory, died aged 98 at his home in Swettenham, Cheshire. Following the news items, we have a poem read by Jenny. Now, on to the news. We hope you enjoy our selection of articles for this week.
Lucky Riverside diners can receive a free picnic snack box from a punting boat in Oxford as part of a major supermarket's delivery service. Asda will hand out 200 packages to picnickers on the River Charwell using a punting boat over the weekend of Saturday, August the 10th and Sunday, August the 11th. The snack box includes items such as stuffed vine leaves, mozzarella pearls and Italian cheese and ham rollitos from its new Picnic and Deli Bites range, as well as a choice of wine. The launch comes as a new research from the supermarket reveals that Brits are spending 50% more on picnics now than 10 years ago. Available for 1 week only, the service will operate along the stretch of the river with each box serving two. Asda's picnic packages will contain a selection of product from the retailer's new range, including a marinated pickle pot, stuffed vine leaves, stuffed peppers with cream cheese, marinated mozzarella pearls, hot honey and chili olives with Iberica cheese, spiced vegetable Samoas, and tomato and mozzarella parcels. A police helicopter was required to locate and arrest a man in connection with a suspected firearm incident in Oxfordshire. The incident took place from 11:30 a.m. onwards on Wednesday, July the 31st, and lasted into the afternoon as police units were dispatched to Overthorpe Road in Banbury. A 52-year-old man of no fixed abode was arrested on suspicion of possession of an imitation firearm with intent to cause fear and violence by Thames Valley Police. Armed police officers seized an air rifle and said that the man remains in police custody. A Thames Valley Police spokesperson said, "We received a report of a man with a firearm in Overthorpe Road, Banbury, at around 11:30 a.m. today, the 31st of July. The incident was resolved safely with no one hurt or threatened with a firearm. Our investigation is ongoing and anyone with information should call 101 or make a report on our website quoting reference number 43240365045. This was confirmed by the National Police Air Service, who dispatched a helicopter from Birmingham to aid Thames Valley Police. A spokesperson from NPAS said, "At 12:28 p.m. on Wednesday, July the 31st, 2024, a police helicopter crew from NPAS Birmingham was deployed to the Banbury area to assist Thames Valley Police in the search for a suspect in a vehicle." The sails of a windmill close to the Oxfordshire border were turned at the weekend. The process, which occurs monthly at Brill Windmill, was performed at midday on Sunday, July the 28th. The sails are turned at midday on the last Sunday of each month, and the windmill is then open to the public in the afternoon from 12:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m. The mill's sails were turned in April to mark its official opening for the year following major repair work on its sails and braking system last year. The Brill Society, which manages and maintains the windmill, created a schedule to keep the sails in good condition. With a scenic location at the top of the hill, the mill dates from 1680 and is owned by Brill Parish Council, while management, maintenance and public opening are overseen by the Society. To go inside the windmill, which is open from Easter to the end of September, it costs £5 for adults, but children are admitted free of charge.
Parish councillors continue to push on with action to save a threatened swimming pool, which is due to close within weeks. Oxford Brookes University intends to close the 25-metre swimming pool at its Harcourt Hill campus. The university said the swimming pool, which is around 50 years old, is at an end-of-life stage and the maintenance costs of over £500,000 mean it is not viable. More than 1,500 people have now signed a petition opposing the closure of the facility, which is open to the local community and used by school children from 12 different schools in the Oxford area. Lorna Berrett, chair of Botley and North Hinksey Parish Council, said, "We are not giving up on this campaign. There are only 5 public pools in Oxford and no others on this side of town. Losing even one would be a real blow to the community. Swimming is an important form of exercise and leisure for all ages and a great family activity. We have engaged with Brookes and delivered a petition to the Vice-Chancellor. We note that the costs of maintenance quoted by Brooks are phased over a 9-year period. We know that Brooks value community engagement, and so we are appealing to those community values and their long history of providing leisure facilities that are used by Botley residents and schools. We ask them to work with Vale of Whitehorse District Council, ourselves and other interested bodies to ensure a swimming pool can continue to operate at this location. In the longer term, we would want to ensure that whoever takes over the Harcourt Hill site will commit to maintaining the pool. The university is set to relocate all its activities in Oxford onto the Headington campus over the next year.
Jeremy Clarkson has submitted a new plan to expand a pub he recently purchased in the Cotswolds, which includes a first floor bar. The former Top Gear star, whose Diddley Squat farm is based in Chadlington, bought the Oxfordshire village pub, The Windmill, near Burford, amid reports he offered almost £1 million for the property. This proposal is a variation to the existing permission Mr. Clarkson has already secured. An applicant planning paper states, to update the floor plans to include a bar on the first floor, extend the licensable area outside the premises, and include a temporary tent in a fixed location. Mr. Clarkson recently remarked of the pub, there is some work to be done on the pub itself, as the cellar is too small, the gable end is falling down, the outside decking area is dangerous, the water is unfit for human consumption, the loft is full of dead rats, and the lavatories are illegal. And I can't start work on any of these things now, because when I bought the pub, I inherited a long-standing commitment to a young couple who, in a couple of weeks' time, are having their wedding reception there. Mr. Clarkson's Hawkstone Lager is on offer at the pub, which is located near the site of a former dogging hotspot. Thousands of fans raced to Diddley Squat Farm amid filming for season 4 of Clarkson's Farm. The hit Prime Video show documents day-to-day life at Jeremy Clarkson's farm in Chadlington, Oxfordshire. Season 3 of the show was released in May of this year and once again proved popular with fans coming from all over the world to catch a glimpse. Now with the filming and production of Season 4 already underway at the location near Chipping Norton, thousands more fans have descended on the farm. On Saturday, July the 27th, crowds of tourists were spotted visiting the Diddley Squat Farm shop and the adjoined bar, which serves Hawkstone beer and cider. Queues formed for both attractions as families and couples spent the day out at the farm in the glorious sunny weather. Fans were recently treated to an update on the new season's progress as several teasing posts were made online. Posting on the official Diddley Squat Farm Shop Facebook page, Mr. Clarkson said, "Another day in the can, S4. This was accompanied by a photograph showing the crew's radios and microphones stacked together after a day of filming. A photograph of Mr. Clarkson and his girlfriend Lisa Horgan was also shared on X alongside the news that the fourth season was being filmed. No release date has been announced as of yet for the new series, but it is expected to be aired next year.
Leaders in high performance computing, HPC, and artificial intelligence, AI, from across the UK and Europe will come together in September to explore the advancements of supercomputing and AI. Bicester-based HPC solutions provider Aces Flight will host the second sustainable reality event on September the 25th at Bletchley Park near Milton Keynes, renowned for its code breaking during World War II. The event promises attendees a day of immersive experiences and insightful sessions. It will feature speakers ready to share their experiences of building, running and maintaining HPC and AI systems from the hardware they have chosen, the software that their platforms are built on, the data centres hosting their equipment, and the teams of people involved in their solutions. Kristin Merritt of Aces Flight said, "Sustainable reality is about exchanging ideas and the developing tangible plans of action on how we build forward together. Now in our second year, our focus is on learning from pioneers in our community, seeing firsthand how supercomputing and AI are rising to meet new challenges and exploring new ideas and concepts that we can take with us into 2025 and beyond. Where better than Bletchley Park to focus our minds on the benefits of disruptive thinking and the possibilities open to us? Attendees will learn how the industry is building AI superclusters, how to leverage commercial support to reduce security risks, and how neurodiversity within their teams can be embraced to enhance both equity and productivity. They will also have the opportunity to view hands-on demonstrations of the Enigma machine and receive guided tours of Bletchley Park's grounds. The event will welcome several distinguished speakers from institutes and industry pioneers, such as the University of York, University of Cambridge, Northern Ireland High Performance Computing, Red Hat, Borealis, the Numerical Algorithms Group, Women in HPC, Aces Flight, and more. These individuals have made significant contributions in their respective fields and organizations. They have continuously paved the way in developing products, solutions, and systems that deliver excellence along with additional benefits to users, customers, and teams. Each one has contributed to moving the needle and is keen to share their feedback, advice, and experiences with the group. The event will conclude with a session on Move the Needle, a project in partnership with Women in HPC, which seeks to bring about incremental changes in the HPC field to leave an inclusive and sustainable legacy. This year's theme of Move the Needle highlights the impact of individual contributions in achieving collective goals across broad missions.
Pupils from a school in Bicester recently took the trip of a lifetime to Kenya to volunteer and learn more about the culture. During the trip, Year 13 pupils from the Cooper School spent time volunteering at a school which involved teaching a class of children aged 7, as well as helping in a school kitchen. The pupils taught a music lesson in which they taught the children the hokey pokey, which was a big hit. The kitchen staff taught the students how to make traditional native food, such as chapati, by mixing the ingredients, forming the dough, rolling it out, and cooking it on a hot plate. Then they served the food to the children before departing from the school to visit a dump as an eye-opening experience into the slums. The school staff said one of the highlights for many of the students at the Cooper School was serving the students in Kenya their lunchtime meal. During the trip, some students also helped by painting a new classroom, with others continuing to fix metal mesh to the insides of the windows to reinforce them. After an emotional goodbye, they headed to an Ukuru dump site where approximately 150 families live. As the students walked up the hill, all that could be seen was an avalanche of rubbish stretching for what looked like miles. A spokesman for the Cooper School said this experience was a real eye-opener for the students, and as difficult as it was, it was also so heartwarming for the students to know that they were helping the locals by buying gifts they had made from the materials at the dump, which was so incredible. The students and staff had a great time and have gathered memories and learning experiences that will last a lifetime. The students then travelled to the Masai Mara, where they saw wildlife, including elephants, giraffes, zebras, wildebeest, jackals, cows and goats, and discovered that Masai Mara is 176 times bigger than Bicester. The students also saw many other animals such as wildebeest, buffaloes, ostrich, elephants and zebras, and walked along a river full of hippos and Nile crocodiles. The year 13s, thankfully, did not miss out on the England game, as staff at the camp allowed the students to watch the match. The next day, students started out in Masai village, introduced with a traditional welcoming dance, with many of the students invited to join and embrace the culture by dancing alongside them. They were then invited into the houses of the Masai leaders, who educated them on everything surrounding the village before travelling home the next day.
45 houses in South Oxfordshire and the Vale of White Horse, which have been brought and refurbished by the area's district councils, are now ready for people to move in. The initiative comes more than two decades since the last council houses were sold in the districts. With house prices having sharply risen since then, the council said they were tackling the problem head on. The homes, 27 of which are in South Oxfordshire and 18 of which are in the Vale of the White Horse, have been prepared for individuals and families who are in the highest level of housing need. These include families moving from conflict zones such as Ukraine and Afghanistan. It is the first phase of the council's plan to become long-term social landlords for residents. The move has been largely funded by immediately available grants that are intended to initially support those in high housing need. The homes can be later used to support long-term housing need in the communities. Councillor Maggie Philipova-Rivers, Cabinet Member for Housing at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, "Making use of this national funding was an incredible opportunity to tackle two issues, the immediate and urgent need to find homes for people fleeing conflict and the long-term need to provide members of our local communities with a supply of good quality, genuinely affordable homes. Energy-efficient measures, such as new combi boilers and double glazing, will help to keep energy bills as low as possible. Not only are we using external grant funding, we're also contributing money to buy these homes to help with our district's housing issues in the long term. Ultimately, this process will be much more cost-effective than having to deal with homelessness issues in the future." Councillor Sue Call, Cabinet Member for Housing at Vale of the White Horse District Council, added, "Becoming social landlords once more will help us to help those in most need within the Vale. We are determined to help improve people's living situations and make the most of all opportunities to do that. Using the funding to help build up a stock of council-owned affordable homes will ensure people on lower incomes can live and thrive here. We're delighted to see the properties refurbished and freshly decorated, ready to provide a welcoming home for those who need it most, both now and into the future. Over time, these homes will contribute to the council's housing delivery strategy. It aims to provide suitable, affordable homes and address the lack of availability of affordable housing in South Oxfordshire and the Vale of the White Horse." Just one in 45 rape offences recorded by Thames Valley Police last year resulted in a charge or court summons, new figures show. Rape Crisis England and Wales said increasing charging rates and access to specialist sexual violence support is vital, as recent data shows rape offences took police forces the longest time to investigate and charge. Home Office figures show there were 2,318 rape offences recorded by Thames Valley Police in the year to March. Of them, 50 resulted in a charge or summons, accounting for just 2.2%. Meanwhile, the police force had an average charge and summons rate of 5.6% across all offences. Across England and Wales, 2.6% of rape offences led to a charge or summons, while the overall charge rate for all recorded offences was 6.4%. Kira Bergman, Chief Executive of Rape Crisis, said, "This data reflects what we already know. The criminal justice system must do better for victims and survivors. Those survivors who take the brave steps to report rape and sexual assault do so with the expectation that there will be accountability for the perpetrator. That just 2.6% of adult rape investigations result in a charge or summons is unacceptable." She added, "With so many survivors being denied their opportunity to seek criminal justice, it's clear that the system isn't working. But we need more than a level of commitment. We need to see drastic improvements." The Home Office said rape officers that led to a charge or court summons took the longest time to investigate, at an average of 423 days. This is compared with 55 days for violence against the person offences and 28 days for theft offences. Of the rape offences recorded in Thames Valley, 33.8% were not assigned an outcome as of March, meaning they were still under investigation. Meanwhile, 40.9% were closed due to evidential difficulties where the suspect was identified, but the victim did not support further action. Ms. Bergman added, "Increasing charging rates is vitally important, but so too is access to specialist sexual violence support." Separate figures from the Crown Prosecution Service show 3,847 suspects were charged in all rape cases referred for a charging decision in 2023-24, a 28% increase on the year before. The CPS said it consistently charges around 7 out of 10 rape or serious sexual offence cases referred by police for a charging decision. A government spokesman said, "In far too many cases, rape victims aren't getting the justice they deserve. It is important that police and prosecutors work together in a timely way to build the strongest possible case." A half-billion-year-old spiny slug has shed light on the origins of animals like oysters and octopuses, Oxford University researchers have said. Researchers, including scientists from the University of Oxford, have discovered a new species of mollusk that lived 500 million years ago. Called Shishania aculeata, the new fossil reveals that the earliest mollusks, animals that do not have a backbone, were flat, shell-less slugs covered in a protective spiny armour. Some of the fossils were preserved upside down and show that the bottom of the animal was naked with a muscular foot like that of a slug. Experts suggest Shishania, initially referred to as the plastic bag because of its appearance, would have used this foot to creep across the seafloor. Corresponding author Associate Professor Luke Parry of the Department of Earth Sciences at Oxford said, "Trying to unravel what the common ancestor of animals as different as a squid and an oyster looked like is a major challenge for evolutionary biologists and paleontologists, one that can't be solved by studying only species alive today." Shoshannia gives us a unique view into a time in mollusk evolution for which we have very few fossils, informing us that the very earliest mollusk ancestors were armoured spiny slugs, prior to the evolution of the shells that we see in modern snails and clams. The new species was found in well-preserved fossils from eastern Yunnan province in southern China, dating from a geological period called the Early Cambrian, approximately 514 million years ago. The specimens of Shoshannia are all only a few centimetres long and are covered in small spiny cones made out of a material, chitin, also found in the shells of modern crabs, insects, and some mushrooms. Unlike most mollusks, Shoshannia did not have a shell that covered its body, suggesting that it represents a very early stage in the evolution of the animal. Today, mollusks come in many different forms, including snails and clams, and even highly intelligent groups such as squids and octopuses. This diversity evolved very quickly a long time ago, and because of this, very few fossils have been left behind that chronicle the early evolution of mollusks. The spines of Shoshannia show an internal system of canals that are less than 1/100 of a millimetre in diameter. These features show that the cones were secreted at their base by tiny protrusions of cells that increase surface area, such as in our intestines, where they aid food absorption. Researchers say this method of secreting hard parts would be like the workings of a natural 3D printer. This allows any invertebrate animal to secrete hard parts with huge variation of shape and function, from providing defence to facilitating movement.
Here is news of an unusual opportunity for a local youngster. A car parts company is searching for a Lego-obsessed teenager as it looks to hire its first toy car mechanic. GSF Car Parts, which has two branches in Oxford, is offering this unique apprenticeship in an effort to address the automotive industry's skills shortage in the UK. The successful candidate will receive £5,000 and an unlimited supply of Lego, Meccano and other toy car building sets. Additionally, GSF has promised to support the apprentice throughout their school studies, and the successful candidate will be guaranteed a job in the automotive industry once they turn 16. The apprentice will create how-to guides for other children and document their learning experiences through the brand's TikTok account. Steve Home, CEO of GSF Car Parts, said, "We're so excited to announce this incredible opportunity, inviting a budding young mechanic to join the GSF team as our toy car apprentice. Remember those childhood days of racing toy cars and dreaming of becoming the ultimate car expert? Well, we're turning those dreams into reality." He added, "This is a chance to immerse yourself in the world of automotive excellence and represent GSF as we bring the next generation of talent into the industry. This one-of-a-kind role is designed to empower a young person with the chance to learn awesome skills in a fun way."
A new Japanese restaurant has opened for the first time in Oxford. Wilding opened in Little Clarendon Street in 2021 on the site of the former Café Rouge in Little Clarendon Street, sometimes known as Little Trendy Street. But it shut for good in May, and restaurant chain Kibu has taken over the premises in the side street off Walton Street, which features bars, shops, Gale's Bakery, restaurants, a pub, and the Common Ground Café and venue. Kibu already has restaurants in Battersea, Cheltenham, Bristol, Solihull and Cambridge, and opened in Oxford on Tuesday. The premises have been completely redesigned inside. General Manager Imogen Whelan said the restaurant has been busy since opening and added that Jericho residents and customers from other parts of the city had given them a warm welcome. Kibo is offering a taste of Tokyo, a feast of contemporary Japanese dishes, sushi rolls and exotic cocktails. Dishes include sushi and sashimi sharing platters, wagyu beef, crisp tempura, bowls of ramen, handmade gyoza, and a range of other classic and contemporary Japanese dishes. There is also a wide selection of Japanese whiskey and beers, sake, and Japanese-inspired cocktails. Opportunist burglars broke into a house by climbing through a small open window. Once inside the home in Reading Road, Goring, the thieves carried out a messy search, Thames Valley Police said. It is unknown at the moment what has been stolen. Thames Valley Police's priority crime team, which is based at Abingdon Police Station, is appealing for witnesses to the burglary, which happened sometime between 8:30 a.m. and 5:55 p.m. on July the 29th. Police are also asking householders to review CCTV and doorbell footage in the area from the time of the incident. Call 101, quoting the reference number 43240361947. A man from Warwick tried the Bicester Park Run for the first time earlier this month and has praised its enthusiastic volunteers. Park Run is a free community event where people can walk, jog, run, volunteer or spectate, taking place up and down the country every Saturday morning. Bicester Park Run takes place at Langford Fields and is just one of the 1,281 park run events around the country taking place every weekend, with more locations constantly being added. On Saturday, July the 27th, over 700 people attended Bicester Park Run as the town hosted visitors of Vegan Campout, a festival which attracted 12,000 people. Although Mr. Thomas was not able to explore the town and local coffee shops on his visit, he was able to complete his 46th park run on Saturday, July the 13th. He said he tries to fit in a park run wherever he is, as well as volunteering and running at his local one. The park run was simple to find because of the excellent directions on the website and 5K app, with convenient parking at a local school, he said. The enthusiastic volunteers pointed us in the right direction and kept us going where we felt like walking. I wanted my photo taken next to the Bicester Park Run sign when I arrived, so I handed my phone to a bunch of fellow runners and realised the bloke taking my photo was in my class at secondary school in Newent, Gloucestershire, from the late 1970s. He didn't recognise me, so I thought I'd remind him at the end. During the run, he charged off ahead of me and I didn't see him again, so I sent him a message later. Mr. Thomas said he felt relieved that the course was flat. Feeling old, I managed to hobble around the two laps in 28 minutes and 33 seconds, he said. Choosing to run the course in summer was sensible, as the latter parts of each lap went across rough ground and grass, which could be hard going in wet or in winter. I kept thinking that we must be coming back to the start, and then there was another field to run across and a corner to turn. I felt like I left my usual sprint finish in Warwick, but someone ahead of me said they felt sick, so at least I didn't feel ill. He added, "It's great to see people up, out, running and chatting on a Saturday morning. I met lots of people, both at Warwick and on our travels. Long may it continue."
This year, on August the 4th, it was the 110th anniversary of Britain declaring war on Germany and the start of the First World War. To mark the anniversary, Blenheim Palace has revealed it has a special album of letters, photographs and entries from when the UNESCO World Heritage Site was used as a hospital between autumn 1914 and May 1915. The 9th Duke of Marlborough opened up his Woodstock home for use as a convalescence hospital in the early months of the Great War, and it was run by Sister Amy Munn. In the hospital album, she noted, Blenheim Palace was closed as a hospital on May the 31st, 1915, and the numerous letters received from the trenches since then are eloquent of the affection of the men for their home and to the Duke of Marlborough for his unfailing kindness and sympathy to them. The album lists the name, rank and age of each patient, as well as his regiment and ailment or complaint. There is also a column in which the patient could make his remarks upon discharge, the date of which is also noted. The complaints of the teenagers and young men vary greatly from gunshot wounds, gas poisoning and shrapnel, to flu, rheumatism and even frostbite. Photographs and letters of thanks are also included in the album, and it becomes apparent that Sister Munn wrote a postcard to each of the men who had been under her care to find out how they had fared once they left Blenheim. The responses were many and varied. Some wrote from the trenches. Others who were sent to recover elsewhere compared their latest treatment to the care they had received at Blenheim. Some of the letters are from distressed and grieving relatives who, having seen photographs of the patients in a newspaper article of the time, write in the hope that the familiar-looking man in the image will turn out to be a son, husband or father who has been reported as missing in action. There were also letters notifying Sister Munn of the death of someone who had previously been in her care. Antonia Keeney, social historian at Blenheim Palace, said, "The album is an absolute goldmine and is an amazing snapshot of the early days of the First World War, when the men and their families couldn't have begun to imagine the horrors that lay ahead or how long it would drag on for." The album was displayed at Woodstock's Blenheim Palace in the Long Library for the weekend of August the 3rd to August the 4th.
Members of Oxford Brookes University Boat Club have clinched a bronze medal at the Olympic Games in Paris. Rowers Ollie Wilkes, David Ambler, Matt Aldridge and Freddie Davidson came third in the men's Coxless Four yesterday. The team turned it around, having started slowly and came from last place to finish on the podium. The British crew swept past Italy 800 metres from home into third place, eventually setting for bronze with United States taking gold and New Zealand silver. One of the United States rowers, Liam Corrigan, attended Oxford University and was based at Oriel College. And the Brookes Quartet embraced in a hug after stepping out of their boat at the Vaersermann Nautical Stadium on the sixth day of the Olympic Games. The BBC commentator Katie Smith described it as a very proud day for Oxford Brookes. Broadcaster Sir Matthew Pinsent, who won 4 consecutive Olympic gold medals, called it a brilliant bronze for Great Britain. Dame Catherine Granger, a former Olympic gold medalist, said on BBC, "I think we've seen over the season they've had a big challenges coming out of the last couple of years. It's a real test of cohesion in that boat. Britain had to get away from that Italian boat. As much as we can tell from the outside, they will be proud of the medal." Oxford Brookes University Boat Club had previously had 12 former athletes with Olympic honours before the 2024 Games. Brooks is being represented by a total of 8 members from the Oxford Brookes University Boat Club at the Paris Games. Rory Gibbs, Morgan Boulding and Tom Digby will row in the men's 8, with Harry Brightmore selected as their coxswain on Friday. Louise Kingsley, British Rowing Director of Performance, who is rowing team leader in Paris, said, "This Olympic cycle has come with a few challenges along the way, but the athletes, support staff and coaches have really pulled together to create a fantastic atmosphere, culture and training environment that has led to impressive results on the water." Earlier on Thursday morning, Helen Glover missed out on a 3rd Olympic title as Great Britain were agonisingly edged out in a dramatic women's 4 final. The mum of 3, who spoke at Oxford Union 7 years ago, won pairs gold at London 2012 and Rio 2016, took 4 years out of the sport before the Tokyo Olympics and 12 months off after those games before deciding to come back for more. But her team were pipped by the Netherlands, who held on to cross the line in 6 minutes, 27.31 seconds, 0.18 seconds ahead of the British boat. A rower who came out of a coma has won a gold medal at the Olympics in a nail-biting final. Georgie Brayshaw from Wallingford was part of Great Britain's women's quadruple sculls crew who pipped the Netherlands by just 0.15 seconds at Weersemaan Nautical Stadium. Georgie and teammates Lauren, Henry, Hannah Scott and Lola Anderson trailed the Netherlands from the start, and their dream of striking gold seemed to be over just metres from the finish line. But with one final British push, the two boats finished side by side and a photo finish was declared. Few nervous glances, inside boats and beyond to the stands, to the big screen, where it was soon revealed that Britain had beat the Netherlands by the tiny margin of 0.15 seconds. Georgie, who is originally from Leeds, moved to Wallingford with her fiancé Ashley 4 years ago to pursue her rowing at Henley's Leander Club. Before the Olympic training schedule ramped up, she was also a coach at Wallingford Rowing Club for a season. She said she had shared her teammates' belief that the Dutch could be overhauled in those final moments. She added, "Racing is always going to be fluid, always dynamic, because all of these competitors are Olympians. It's never over at 500, 1,000 or 1,500 metres. We know that if you commit, you move." The victorious British crew were presented with their gold medals by the Princess Royal, a former Olympian. It was the perfect start for Team GB at the Paris Regatta after failing to win a single gold in Tokyo 3 years ago. Georgie had an incredible personal journey to get there. 15 years ago, then aged 15, she was placed in an induced coma after a serious horse riding accident and spent a year paralysed down her left side with no memory of the incident. "I could only use my right arm and only smile with half my face," she said. She also had to learn simple things like running again, but not wanting to be different from her peers at school, she just pushed through. At university, she picked up rowing and soon joined the GB Rowing Olympic Talent Programme. By 2023, the British women were world champions and heading into the Olympic Games Paris 2024, wanting to match that feat in a discipline GB had never won before. And yet Georgie still has to manage the fallout from the accident so long ago. "I was quite weak on my left, or I just didn't quite have control of my left-hand side," she said. "It's taken quite a lot of extra training to get those neurons firing properly, but even now I notice the differences and just kind of accept myself as I am, what I am." Railway upgrades to improve journeys between Bicester and Leamington Spa are now complete. The section of the Chiltern Main Line reopened today, August the 1st, after a five-day closure which saw improvements to the route between London Marylebone and the West Midlands. During the temporary closure, a new 240-ton bridge deck was installed to replace a bridge which carries the railway over the River Charwell in King's Sutton near Banbury. Passengers have been thanked for their patience while Network Rail and its partners carried out the work. At the same time, more than 500 metres of railway north of Banbury station was upgraded, including the replacement of sections of track and improved drainage to deal with the changing weather conditions. Adam Checkley, Infrastructure Director for Network Rail's Central Route, said, "This bridge replacement and track and drainage upgrade on the Chiltern Main Line between Bicester and Leamington Spa means more reliable journeys for passengers and freight. Thank you to passengers for their patience while we complete this essential work." Chiltern Railway's Commercial and Customer Strategy Director, Andy Camp, added, "I'd like to thank customers for their patience and understanding during the closure as Network Rail carried out crucial engineering works. Normal service has been resumed and the engineering works will ensure more reliable journeys for customers in the future."
Historic Witney Town Football Club has risen again with a new ground and a new manager. The non-league club, which dissolved in 2013, is one of the oldest of the county's senior clubs in Oxfordshire, formed in 1885. They have been revived by Chairman Paul Foster and will play home games at Witney ATP for the 2024-25 season on Saturday afternoons under new manager Ben Reardon. Steve Bott, chair of Witney Vikings Youth Football Club, said, "The reforming of WTFC was inevitable, considering how many people are invested in football locally. Oxford United legend Big Ron Atkinson, who went on to manage Manchester United, Aston Villa, West Brom and Sheffield Wednesday, sent a message of support. He said, "Witney Town has a special meaning in my life. They are the first football team I ever really coached." He said that the former Witney Town chairman and ex-Oxford United and City player, Aubrey Oakley, asked me to come out one night and help with the coaching of the team. He gave me a fiver for it, actually, and 12 months later I was still doing two nights a week for the same fiver. But I really enjoyed it. It was a good experience from my point of view. Atkinson brought several top-flight teams to Witney over the years, and his most memorable was when he was boss of West Bromwich Albion in 1979. His side played a friendly against Brian Clough's European Cup winners, Nottingham Forest, at Marriott's Close, which drew record crowds to Witney. He said it was probably the most epic night in Witney Town's history. Great night for the club. The biggest gate they'd had for Witney was something like 2,500. That night, there was 7,500. People up trees watching the game, which ended up a fiercely competitive no-score draw. I wish them and their new manager, Ben Reardon, all the best and hopefully things work out for them. For fans, Witney were the blanket men, due to Witney having five major factories producing blankets at one time. Maybe their most famous former player is local boy David Moss, who went on to enjoy a good career with Luton Town and was part of the coaching staff when Oxford United won the Milk Cup in 1986. However, by the start of 1992, They had left Marriott's Close and moved to the edge of the town, to a purpose-built new ground. But the club started to struggle off the pitch, and in 2001 they ceased to exist. Fans formed Witney United, focused on local players and a community spirit, and in 2011 reverted to their historic name of Witney Town.
Staff and customers at popular Oxford City Centre pub The Grapes are about to celebrate a year since it reopened. The hostelry across the road from the new theatre in George Street shut suddenly at the end of 2021, but returned a year ago after the London-based pub company run by Dick Morgan stepped in to take it over. Manager Johnny Roberts, with his team of staff, reopened the pub, which dates back to the 1800s, on August the 3rd last year. And on Saturday, they will celebrate the anniversary. Daisy Hunt, who has been a member of the bar staff for the past 12 months, said it had been a very enjoyable year. She added, "It's a busy pub. The first month was probably the quietest, and then once the students came back, we got ransacked. I'm doing 4 or 5 shifts a week at the moment. We have a good front of house team. We've got a full food menu with weekly deals, and they sell well. Closing time is 2 a.m. from Wednesday to Saturday, and from Sunday to Tuesday, we close at midnight. It's a lot of fun." The local branch of Real Ale Group Camera, Campaign for Real Ale, welcomed the reopening of The Grapes, which serves some local beers. The Morgan Pub Company also runs the Gardener's Arms in the North Parade Avenue in North Oxford, and both pubs play their collections of vinyl records. The Grapes is the busier pub of the two because of its prominent position in the city centre. The George Street Pub was established in 1808 and may originally have been called the Bunch of Grapes. It was rebuilt in its present form in about 1894 and once had swinging front doors likened to a Wild West saloon. Bath Ales were in charge in 2012 and revamped the pub. It was renamed Beard Oxford in 2015 and then its name reverted back to The Grapes by August 2017 when it was given a refurbishment and theatre, photo and memorabilia were removed from the walls. Then in 2019, West Berkshire Brewery took charge and went ahead with the £70,000 refurbishment, improving the bar area and created new wooden booths for seating. Those wooden booths were removed and replaced with different seating, and a new Grapes pub sign went up outside when Dick Morgan took over. Drinkers were shocked when The Grapes shut in 2021 and camera representatives campaigned for it to reopen. Star said they were finalising their plans to celebrate the anniversary.
An important missed deadline has led to widespread concerns a major city road in Oxford could be prevented from reopening. Botley Road has been closed since April 2023 as part of the redevelopment of Oxford Railway Station, a £116 million project. But Network Rail, which is leading the works, has now missed a crucial deadline to account for its planned rail blockade, a railway closure, which typically needs around a year's notice, according to industry sources. The road was supposed to reopen temporarily from October 2023 to March this year, but delays forced Network Rail to rethink and announce the closure would continue until this October. The authority announced earlier this month there would be a further delays owing to the unforeseen complexity of the project. Oxfordshire County Councillor leader Liz Leffman said in a BBC radio interview earlier this week that she expected Network Rail's work to be delayed by another year. Ms. Leffman's comments were branded largely speculative by the council after other councillors, such as independent Saj Malik,
said he was frustrated her slip of the tongue had let the information out rather than act being properly presented to the public. The Oxford Times has asked Network Rail for an update on the project, but the infrastructure manager has failed to provide new timings for the work. However, it is understood the railway company's missed deadline could be another significant hurdle to delay the works further. A county council spokesman said, Network Rail arranged a rail blockade at Oxford Station for July 27 to 31, 2024, which is when they originally intended to install the new Botley Road rail bridge. However, they missed this deadline, which is why they will need to organise another rail blockade once they finalise their plans for completing the project. Network Rail disputes the suggestion it necessarily takes a year to get permission to implement a rail blockade, despite third-party sources stating where major works are needed to be carried out, works are pre-planned 12 months ahead of schedule at times which aim to cause the least disruption to commuters. A spokesman for Network Rail said, these closures of railways are generally planned in advance for enhancement and renewal work because they need to be agreed with passenger and freight operators and coordinated across the country's entire railway network. They are often planned for times when we expect fewer passengers, such as bank holidays, but this isn't always the case. They do not always take a year to plan. They may be planned swiftly for emergency repairs, for example. Meanwhile, traders in Oxford have reacted to what they claim to be poor communication from the authorities involved. Vikas Patel, manager of the East West Provision Store on Oxford Road, said, nobody from the council has come to see us or anything. We're losing trade, and people are scared to come here now because of the traffic. Mr. Patel said he had found out about the delays through our media coverage. A spokesman for the Rocks Rescue Oxford, backing Oxford Businesses Group Graham Jones, said he had been absolutely shocked by Miss Leffman's remarks that the works could take another year. He added, it is so badly planned, it's unimaginable. Mr. Jones hit out at the County Council for having known the delay was highly likely 2 months before the announcement. The Council says it was limited in what it could say due to pre-election restrictions and that Network Rail was responsible for communication on the project. But Mr. Jones said that in a meeting for businesses with the council on July the 9th, normally held quarterly, the council representatives had spoken as if a controversial traffic filters trial was still going ahead in November as planned. Mr. Jones said, there seems to be a lot of shady business going on. Why did senior officers tell us in July at that meeting that, as far as they knew, Network Rail was still finishing its work at the end of October and the traffic filters were coming in straight after that? This is very bad. Did the council officers lie to us? The county council says the senior officer at the meeting had not been formally told the Botley Road would definitely not be reopening at this point. Ms. Prezel and fellow ward councillor Lois Muddiman said they thought Thames Water was somewhat to blame for the delays. But a Thames Water spokesman said, Thames Water is not aware of anything that has caused a delay to progress the works, but can investigate specific concerns. The design of the water main diversions has been amended several times as the overall Network Rail project design has evolved, but where changes have been required, these have been carried out quickly and expedited where possible.
Labour County Councillor Duncan Enright, the party's county spokesman for Transport and Strategic Development, said, "Councillor Leffman is not the right person to be speaking on complex transport issues such as progress with the Botley Road scheme. We are waiting to hear from Network Rail and the Department of Transport, and she must apologise for her speculative remarks." Construction work on a roundabout project has been completed and a new bus lane and speed limits are now in place. Oxfordshire County Council's Kidlington Roundabout project aimed to enhance travel for those living in and around Charwell and North Oxford. Upgrades include improved footways and cycleways, new pedestrian crossings and extended bus lanes. Improvements around the roundabout include new signalised walking and cycling crossings on Bicester Road, Oxford Road South and Freeze Way, new 3.5 metre wide shared walking and cycling paths and better street and footpath lighting. There is now also a dedicated bus lane on Bicester Road linking with the bus lane on the eastern section of Kidlington Roundabout and reduced 30 miles per hour speed limits on the roundabout and its approaches. The work also added a new shared used cycle and pedestrian path from Freezeway to Stratfield Brake Sports Ground and a safe waiting area for southbound cyclists to cross the service road along Oxford Road. Councillor Judy Roberts, Cabinet Member for Infrastructure and Development Strategy, said, "I am delighted to see the completion of this project, which dramatically improves safety and connectivity for cyclists and pedestrians. The new signalised parallel crossings on Bicester Road, Oxford Road South and Freeze Way make a real difference to people on foot and cycling. With these and the new bus lanes, we are preparing for the significant growth expected in the Charwell district, with some 22,000 homes planned by 2031 and just under 5,000 of those within a 2-mile radius of this roundabout. The project marks the conclusion of the Oxford Council's North Oxford Corridor Improvements Programme. This was developed in anticipation of housing growth across the Charwell district and forms part of the Council's local transport and connectivity plan. The plan prioritises the health and well-being of residents and aims to invest in an inclusive, integrated and sustainable transport network. It has been delivered with the County Council's construction partner Milestone as 3 separate projects. These are improvements to the A44 between Loop Farm Roundabout and the Cassington Road Roundabout, improvements to the A44 between the A34 Peartree Interchange and the Loop Farm Roundabout, and upgrades to the Kidlington Roundabout. Craig Buzzard, Project Manager at Milestone Infrastructure, said, "It's been great to be part of the project team for Milestone Infrastructure, working collaboratively with Oxfordshire County Council to execute a scheme of this importance to the local community. The project provides widened segregated footways to improve access into Oxford City Centre, which we hope will be well received by pedestrians and cyclists alike."
A family from Oxfordshire have taken part in a boat race to raise thousands of pounds for a cancer charity. Simon Hunt, his brother and 2 cousins, participated in the Three Rivers race on the Norfolk Broads, raising £5,312 for the Ellen MacArthur Cancer Trust. The inland sailing race saw more than 100 vessels navigating 50 miles on the rivers Bure, Ant and Thorn within 24 hours, and this race featured in a recent BBC Countryfile programme. The course involves a lowering of masts to negotiate low bridges and sailing without the use of engines. The Ellen MacArthur Cancer Trust, established by retired sailor Dame Ellen MacArthur, takes young people aged 8 to 24 on sailing and outdoor adventures to inspire them to believe in a brighter future living through and beyond cancer. Mr. Hunt said, "Sadly, cancer has been in our family recently, and so was at the forefront of our minds around the time we decided to take part in the race. My brother James is a professional yacht captain and had heard of the Ellen MacArthur Cancer Trust, a sailing charity supporting young people recovering from cancer treatment. Just seemed like an absolutely perfect fit for a 24-hour boat race. Young people who are diagnosed with cancer are often left with fewer friends, struggle with relationships and their education, miss out on work experience, and develop body image issues once their treatment is finished. The Trust works to help them to regain a sense of self-worth and optimism about the future."
A leading reconstructive surgeon at Oxford University Hospitals found himself living every doctor's worst fear when he diagnosed his teenage son with a rare and aggressive cancer last year. Professor Dominic Furness from Cumnor was on a trip with his family last October when his son Jasper, then aged 18, asked him to look at a lump on his thigh. Mr. Furness, who works at one of the UK's largest sarcoma treatment centres, said, "It was the worst moment of my life. It was a 7-centimetre lump, looking like a large egg sticking out of his thigh, and it was deep. Immediately, I knew it was almost certainly sarcoma. I can't remember what I said to Jasper, but I then went into the bathroom and burst into tears." Mr. Furness texted his colleague, who arranged a scan and biopsy for later that week, leading to a diagnosis of myxoid liposarcoma. Jasper had successful surgery to remove the tumour 4 weeks and 2 days after the lump was found. Now in remission, he and his family have set their sights on giving back to the charity that supported them. He said, "I really appreciate what Dad did for me and how lucky I was to be diagnosed and treated so quickly. It was a tough few months trying to do my A-levels as well, but I prioritise my health and getting back to fitness." His mother Jenny said, "The period after Jasper's lump was found was an absolute whirlwind. It felt totally overwhelming. It was very strange for Dom to swap places in the consulting room from the doctor side to the parent side." While Mr. Furness was already an expert in sarcoma, Jenny was thankful for the resources available on the website of the charity Sarcoma UK to help her make sense of what had happened. She added, "For all of Dom's knowledge, there were still gaps, things we didn't know, didn't understand, and didn't appreciate." Jasper said the charity's website was really useful and helped me. Mr. Furness added, "I'm unbelievably grateful for having such amazing colleagues, and I'm so grateful for the training which meant I knew that had to be done when I spotted Jasper's sarcoma. The quicker people can get treatment when they find a lump, the better." The Furness family has now committed to endorsing the "Don't Delay" message of this year's Sarcoma Awareness Month, which took place in July. They will take part in a cycle ride to raise funds for Sarcoma UK from their hometown of Oxford to Barcelona from August the 27th to September the 6th. Family favourites and animated adventures are heading to the big screen in Oxford and Bicester this summer holidays. The View Cinema in both locations will be offering new releases and re-screenings with movies such as Despicable Me 4 and Inside Out 2 leading the lineup. The cinema's chain Mighty Morning screenings will bring back classics like Garfield and Kung Fu Panda 4 for just £2.49 per ticket when booked online. General Manager at View Oxford, Kazia Birksak, said, "We've got a great selection of new films and big screen entertainment on show, offering a perfect way to enjoy quality family time while school is out for the summer. With film screenings from just £5.99, the big screen experience at View is the perfect treat during the half-term break. Both views will bring favourite children's characters from television shows and web series back to the big screen, including The Gruffalo's Child and Zog and the Flying Doctors, as part of its recently announced family offering View's Big Shorts. These short screenings aim to offer a relaxed big screen environment with dimmed lights and reduced sound designed for children aged 1 to 4. View said, "Our View Mighty Mornings at 10 a.m. will continue to show the latest kids' film from just £2.49 a ticket online." An Abingdon man who works for a windscreen repair firm has made it to the final of the company's annual awards competition. Auto Windscreens technician Alex Stamen, who works for the company's Oxford Service Centre, saw off competition from 17 others to secure his spot in the final of the Clearly the Best contest. He said, "I'm really excited about reaching the final. I can't wait to be there and compete against the best of the best in the company." Mr. Stamen, with 5 years of experience, will compete against three other finalists. They will be assessed on key skills required for the role, including their technical knowledge, customer service, health and safety, and the quality of their workmanship.
A jail sentence has been handed to a man who set fire to his own canal boat, endangering a canal community. James Jonas was sentenced at Oxford Crown Court for several offences, including one count of arson with recklessness as to whether life was endangered. The 38-year-old set his boat, the Happy-Go-Lucky, on fire on August the 19th last year in the Duke's Cut Waterway Canal near Gosford, sentencing him to 3 years imprisonment. Judge Ian Pringle said, "It's clear from your behaviour things were not going well. The danger about arson is the potential it can wreak. It can lead to a loss of life." The offences took place between July the 16th and August the 20th last year. The court heard Jonas had a gentleman's agreement with his neighbour, David Hartland. Jonas owed Mr. Hartland £300, and the pair had an informal agreement that if he didn't pay, Mr. Hartland would take ownership of his boat. However, Jonas instead set fire to the boat after punching Mr. Hartland in the face. The boat was too severely damaged for fire crews to determine the cause of the fire, but Jonas claimed in trial that it was a cigarette butt. It took significant police resources to locate Jonas after the fire was set, and when he was found, he punched an officer twice before jumping into the canal. Whilst in the canal, he shouted, "I'm the angel Gabriel. I'm here to save you." While on bail, he breached court orders and returned twice to the towpath. During the first visit, he punched a stranger in the face in a wholly unprovoked attack. On the second visit, he intimidated Mr. Hartland, saying, "I know what you're doing with the police. I'm going to burn you out." Jonas of Woodstock Road, Oxford, was found guilty after a trial of one count each of common assault, arson, and intimidating a witness. He pleaded guilty to assaulting an emergency worker and assault occasioning actual bodily harm a day before the jury retired. The court heard he has 11 convictions for 16 previous offences. Defending Jonas, his barrister, Peter Defer, said his client appeared to have been unravelling and the offending would not have occurred if it wasn't for underlying problems. He said, in terms of the attempt to analyse quite what was going on, the defendant was reluctant for me to say what was going on in detail, as it's his personal life. There is huge family support for this defendant.
A beer festival is returning to Bampton this month for its third year. Bampton Beer Festival will take place at St Mary's Church on Saturday, August the 17th from noon until 8 p.m. All proceeds from the event will go to local, national and international charities. St Mary's Church was used as the set of St Michael and All Angels Church in the popular television series Downton Abbey. Tickets are £12 and include entry, two drink tokens and festival pint glasses. The family event promises to be a day filled with great beer, delicious food and fantastic music, and is described as being a blast for all beer enthusiasts. Those attending will have the chance to sample a wide variety of craft beers from local breweries while enjoying live music performances. The event will be sponsored by the Trout at Tadpole Bridge, Wild Thyme and Honey, and Fleur de Lis Bampton. A statement from organisers says, "The Bampton Beer Festival is a charity event with all proceeds going to local, national and international charities. The festival is only possible with the help of our sponsors. If you or your business is interested in sponsoring our festival, please contact pete.john.saunders@outlook.com. Tickets for the festival can be purchased at eventbrite.com. A car mechanic who was accused of flipping a client's VW Golf while demonstrating the new braking system has been found not guilty after court directions. Richard Masters, 57, was accused of taking his client out for a demonstration ride when he was speeding down the A4130 Calvin Thomas Way, Wallingford, on October the 26, 2021, accelerating then braking heavily to show off the efficiency of the newly installed brake system. The wheels had allegedly locked and the car spun into a ditch due to an issue with the new braking bias system. The client, who was in the front passenger seat, was allegedly left with a broken back for which he received surgery. Masters of Wantage Road, Wallingford, denied one count of causing serious injury by dangerous driving. He explained that the braking bias system, which was installed incorrectly, was done so by fellow mechanics and was not his responsibility to install or check it. A trial started at Oxford Crown Court this week. However, after a couple of days, the Crown Prosecution Service decided to officially offer no evidence. The decision came after the prosecution's expert witness, Anthony Hurdle, a police forensic collision investigator, gave evidence on Tuesday, July the 30th. On Wednesday, July the 31st, the jury were asked to deliver a not guilty verdict by Judge Hassan Khan's direction.
A Roman road was recently discovered underneath a primary school near Wallingford, giving the pupils a real-life history lesson. The Brightwell Combe Sotwell History Group teamed up with the Wallingford Historic and Archaeological Society for a dig at Brightwell Primary School, in which they found a Roman road. Other items, such as coins and brooches, were also discovered. Brightwell Combe Sotwell Church of England Primary School is a small village school of just over 150 pupils. Head teacher Sue Potts said, "The children have absolutely loved watching the digging work progress." Whilst we have put up a safety barrier to keep the children out of the actual digging site itself, we haven't stopped them from being able to see what has been happening. And so they have been able to approach the area and talk to the archaeologists during their break and lunch times. I have often gone out there to find a group of children asking questions or looking at any of the finds that may have been uncovered. Right from our youngest to our oldest, they've all been curious to see what was happening. Miss Potts said the dig involved careful planning to ensure it wouldn't impact the school and the children too much. A year four pupil said, "I thought that having a Roman service station that was 2,000 years old was fascinating and right under our playground. Who would have thought?" The groups found the road to stretch under two of the school classrooms, as well as a whole row of houses in the village. Miss Potts added, "This experience gave the children an opportunity to see real history appearing before their very eyes. Our year four children studied the Romans earlier in the school year, and so were able to apply some of their knowledge and understanding to talk about the Roman road. They saw just what it takes and how long it can take to uncover even the smallest piece of history. I'm sure it has inspired some of the children to want to learn more about archaeology. As the project comes to an end, the whole school were invited out, a class at a time, to get up close and personal to the road and the amazing finds that were uncovered in the process."
A major police decision has been made after a man hit by an Audi on a major Oxford street was hospitalised. The incident occurred when a pedestrian was involved in the collision in Chapel Street off Cowley Road at around 10:15 p.m. on Friday, May the 3rd. A black Audi A1 was involved and the pedestrian, who was a 39-year-old man, suffered minor injuries. The pedestrian was taken to hospital but has since been discharged. More than 10 police officers attended the incident, while an ambulance and paramedics could also be seen too close to the site outside the O2 Academy in Cowley Road. The busy street was brought to a standstill as treatment was administered to the man before he was taken away to hospital. Thames Valley Police confirmed at the time that the incident had been referred to the Independent Office for Police Conduct, IOPC. A spokesperson for the force said, "As a result of the incident, a mandatory referral has been made by Thames Valley Police to the IOPC. Thames Valley Police has now announced that the IOPC case will go no further, but the incident itself is still under investigation with no arrests made. No arrests have been made, but there still is an active investigation," a spokesperson for the force recently said. The IOPC has filed the case with no further action. A law firm has celebrated its 10th birthday by donating to 10 charities across the UK. Blake Morgan celebrated a decade in business in July, having formed from the merger of Blake Lapthorne and Morgan Cole in 2014. The company decided to commemorate the milestone by making donations to 10 charities across Oxford, London, Southampton, Reading and Cardiff, where its offices are located. Staff in each location took part in a bake-off, with the winner selecting a charity for the firm to donate to. In Oxford, £250 was given to the Cowley Child Contact Centre, selected by bake-off winner and associate in the family team, Rachel Knight. In addition, £250 was donated to Dementia UK, the Oxford office's chosen charity this year. Helen Bunker, chair at Blake Morgan, said, "I'm extremely proud to be part of Blake Morgan and of the work our team does every day. This anniversary is an important milestone for us and a chance to reflect on the successes of the last 10 years. As part of the celebrations, employees were given eco-friendly water bottles made of recycled materials. Through the purchase of the water bottles, more than 650 trees will be planted by Eden reforestation projects.
An initiative aimed at tackling loneliness through bus journeys is set to return to Oxford this summer. The Chatty Bus project, run by Oxford Bus Company, with the support of Age UK Oxfordshire and Oxfordshire Mind, will be back on the new 280 service on Saturday, August the 6th. Volunteers will chat to passengers during their journey between Tame and Oxford. Customers travelling on the Chatty Bus journeys will benefit from a 50% discount, meaning non-concessionary bus pass holders can take the journey for £1. The initiative was first launched in 2019 and is back this year due to its earlier successes. Oxford Bus Company has teamed up with the two charities to further strengthen the support provided. Luke Marion, Managing Director of Oxford Bus Company, said, "Loneliness remains a real issue that affects so many people in our community, and we hope the return of Chatty Bus will help make a difference." Research has found buses form an important social function, and by providing extra engagement in partnership with two excellent charities, we hope to deliver more support and raise awareness of the issue and the help that is available. Chatty Bus will feature a variety of games and information about activities and social groups. Participants will also be urged to enjoy a day out in Oxford before returning home. The initiative returns after Oxford Bus Company's parent company, Go Ahead Group, signed the government's Employers Pledge in 2022. Committing to improving the social connections and reducing loneliness. Buses can provide a lifeline to people living in isolation, as a third of Britons say they catch the bus to have some human contact. Paul Ringer, CEO of Age UK Oxfordshire, said, "We're really pleased to be partnering with Oxford Bus Company again this year for Chatty Bus. The initiative is a wonderful opportunity for many local older people to get or stay connected with others, and our team look forward to chatting with people and helping them link into their community. It's fantastic to see age-friendly initiatives like this, and we are keen to support and encourage other events that are inclusive and help older people make connections." Jess Wilshire, CEO of Oxfordshire Mind, added, "We're thrilled to partner with Oxford Bus Company and Age UK Oxfordshire for the Chatty Bus event. At Oxfordshire Mind, we understand the profound impact that loneliness and isolation can have on mental health. This initiative provides a wonderful opportunity for people to connect, share stories, and build relationships in a welcoming and supportive environment. We encourage everyone to come aboard the 280 bus on August the 6th.
The cost of a night out in Oxford has more than doubled over the last 2 years, according to new research. The study, which analysed factors such as the cost of travel, drinks and accommodation, revealed the price of a night out in Oxford has risen more than 127% since 2022. The average cost of 3 pints in the city has risen by almost 17% over the same period, with the average total cost of a night out now standing at £303. Meanwhile, London's nightlife costs have almost doubled, seeing it place second on the list. Three Scottish cities, Dundee, Edinburgh and Glasgow, made up the top five. An update has been given on the release date of Endeavour star Sean Evans's new TV crime drama, Until I Kill You. It is over a year since the final episode of ITV's Inspector Morse prequel Endeavour was screened with the March 12, 2023 episode watched by millions of viewers. Sean Evans starred in the Oxford-based series, but is now set to appear in a new ITV crime drama series entitled Until I Kill You. The series, which is being produced in partnership with World Productions, also stars Line of Duty actress Anna Maxwell-Martin. No release date has been confirmed when ITV previously told the Oxford Mail that Until I Kill You would air at some point after the summer. World Productions has now shed some light on this after the series was released in other countries, such as New Zealand. A spokesperson for the company said, "We don't yet know about a release date. We don't have a confirmed date for it yet, I'm afraid. It's in the hands of ITV, so they might know more." "Yes, I believe so, that Until I Kill You has been released in other countries, but it is down to ITV, as we don't have a say in when it broadcasts. We would know if there was a confirmed date."
Planning permission has been secured for two new buildings at Harwell Science and Innovation Campus, which will accommodate more than 300 new jobs. The new employment floor space will span 192,523 square feet and will be located across Quad 3 and CoLabs. CoLabs is the first phase of a new innovation quarter that will create around 35,000 square metres of employment floor space in Harwell, while Quad 3 is a new addition to the existing quad. Stuart Grant, CEO of Harwell Campus, said, "We are delighted to have secured planning permission for CoLabs and Quad 3 as part of our wider plan to triple the amount of available space at Harwell over the coming years." Given that Oxford University is spinning out more companies than anywhere else in the UK and other local universities like Cranfield are closing fast, we need to ensure we can offer the right space, environment and home for these exciting companies to start up, scale up and have truly global impact. National property consultancy Carter Jonas secured the planning consent on behalf of Harwell Science and Innovation Limited Partnership. Stephen Roberts, associate partner at Carter Jonas in Oxford, added, "Carter Jonas is proud to have assisted Harwell Campus Partnership in securing planning permission for new facility. Harwell Campus is an extremely important, internationally recognised science and technology cluster where many scientific breakthroughs have occurred in recent years. We very much value our ongoing relationship with the campus partnership and are proud to be part of the professional team that is shaping its future. Both new and existing users of Science and Innovation Campus will benefit from extensive landscaping. The Section 106 agreement delivers measures to optimise bus travel, reducing the use of the private car. Harwell Campus, located about 5 miles southwest of Didcot and 16 miles south of Oxford, is a globally renowned UK science and technology campus. It currently houses around 7,000 research and support staff spread across 250 organisations and benefits from more than £3 billion of science infrastructure, including the UK's national synchrotron facility, the Diamond Light Source, and ISIS Neutron facility. Carter Jonas has advised its client from the inception of the project, leading a multidiscipline consultant team through the planning process. The team will continue to advise on all planning matters for the development until completion at the end of 2025, with construction due to begin on site in August.
The initials OSJ will be a mystery to many people, but for those in the know, it has become an important part of Oxford's musical scene. The Orchestra of St John's has played a key role in the city, sharing its music with diverse audiences and exploring new ways of involving minority groups. It plays at schools for children with special educational needs more than 70 times a year and regularly performs at local hospitals. The orchestra also has an offshoot, the OSJ Voices, a mix of amateur and professional singers, including doctors, teachers, accountants, and priests. The singers recently entertained a 350-strong audience at Oxford Town Hall during a performance of Carmen of Burana, a cantata by composer Carl Orff, alongside an orchestra of young musicians from Oxford and its twin cities. The Orchestra of St John's was founded by John Lubbock, who is now its conductor and artistic director. His life has had music at its core. He was a chorister at St John's Chapel at Windsor Castle, studied singing at the Royal Academy of Music, and was a founder member of the London Symphony Chorus. He is best known today as a conductor and for his long association with the BBC Promenade Concerts. In 1999, he received an honorary fellowship from the Royal Academy of Music, and in 2015 was awarded an OBE for services to the Orchestra of St John's and for helping disabled people. Admirers also point out that in 2023, he achieved a long-held ambition to join a cathedral choir. He now sings regularly at Evensong at Christ Church in Oxford. The Sunday Times recognised his talents, telling readers, "There is something very special about Lubbock's commitment to the music he conducts, and how, through his chosen singers and instrumentalists, he communicates its gist to the audience." There was certainly much praise for his leadership at the recent concert at Oxford Town Hall, with the audience giving a rising 5-minute ovation at the end.
A new mini golf course has been officially opened at a care home in Chipping Norton. Residents and staff of Southern Down Care Home were joined by friends and family to mark the opening by golf captain Philippa. The home said it wanted to get in the spirit of the game and provide a permanent feature to the lovely gardens for everyone to use. Family and friends took part in the event before they enjoyed a barbecue and drinks. With a number of residents having previously been keen golfers, it presented an opportunity for them to keep fit and reminisce over past hobbies. General Manager of the care home, Ariane Acuavera, said, "We always encourage our residents to keep active. This was a great opportunity to move our activities outside to make the most of the weather. Our residents and their guests really enjoyed today, and it was lovely to see so many of them get involved."
Celine Dion's fans were left in tears as they watched her close the 2024 Olympics opening ceremony in Paris. The 56-year-old Canadian singer is battling the incurable stiff person syndrome, and this event marked her first public performance in more than 4 years. She looked incredible in a shimmering silver gown as she performed her rendition of Hymn à l'amour. She was accompanied by a pianist on the first level of the Eiffel Tower, beneath giant illuminated Olympic rings. This was a song which was originally sung by French music icon Edith Piaf, the petite, tangy-voiced, dramatic and quintessentially French chanson singer, who was nicknamed the Little Sparrow. The song dates back to 1945, with words by Edith Piaf. It was first sung by her that year and recorded by her in the 50s. The song envisions a love that outlasts the end of the world, and its title means Hymn to Love. I will spare you from listening to me recite the lyrics in French, so here is the English translation. The blue sky above us can collapse, and the earth can crumble. I don't care if you love me. I don't give a damn about the whole world, as long as love will flood my mornings, as long as my body will shiver under your hands. I don't care about the problem, my love. Since you love me, I would go to the ends of the earth. I would dye my hair blonde if you asked me to. I would reach for the moon. I would steal a fortune if you asked me to. I would disown my homeland. I would disown my friends if you asked me to. People can laugh at me. I would do anything if you asked me to. If one day life tears you away from me, if you die and are far from me, I don't care if you love me, because I would die too. We will have eternity for us, in the blue of all immensity in the sky, no more problems. My love, do you believe we love each other? God reunites those who love each other.
That was the last of our articles for this week. If you have any comments or feedback about Oxtalk, you can telephone Margaret on 07496 062280. That's 07496 062280. Please remember to leave your name and a contact number with your message. Alternatively, you can send an email to mail@oxtalk.org.uk. This edition and those from previous weeks are available on our website, www.oxtalk.org.uk, where you can either listen directly or download the audio file. You can also listen on an Alexa device through the Talking Newspapers skill. If you need advice on this, please phone the main Oxtalk number. Thank you for listening. We'll be back next Tuesday with more news, so until then, we hope you have a good week. Notice to listeners of Oxtalk who use a smart speaker to access our service. There are new instructions for anyone who listens to Oxtalk using Alexa. To listen to Oxtalk in this way, you now have to use the Talking Newspaper skill. First, you need to enable it. Simply say, Alexa, enable Talking Newspaper. Then, to listen to Oxtalk, please follow this procedure. Alexa, open Talking Newspaper.
Welcome to your Talking Newspaper skill. Please say the name of a newspaper or a town or city you would like to hear from.
Oxford.
Here are the following newspapers nearest to Oxford. Please pick a newspaper name. Oxford and District Talking News, Whitney Talking News Latest Edition, Whitney Talking News Previous Edition, Whitney Talking Magazine, Wallingford, and District Talking Newspaper. Or do you want to hear more?
Oxford and District Talking News.
Do you want to listen to Oxford and District Talking News?
Yes.
This is Oxford and District Talking News.
If you have problems listening to Oxtalk in this way, it could be due to the way that your Alexa device is set up. Please check the settings with whoever set up your device in the first place. If you still have problems, please contact Oxtalk and we will try to help.